You know, you really should go out and buy a lottery ticket today, because if you're out there and you're listening to this show right now, you have defied the odds, because the odds of you finding this show by some random guy on the first day of his new podcast, I mean, the odds are astronomical that you pulled it off. So anyways, this is the Late Great Show, and I am your host, Rob Behrens, and we are going to get with it straight ahead. So stick around. Okay, so here we are, and the question might just as well be right now in your mind, not that you're lucky, but that, what is this show? What's it going to be? What's it all about? What's it all about? Well, anyways, just a little side information. Well, it's going to be a topic-driven show, okay? That's the short answer, okay? And where is this show coming from? Well, we are coming to you from the late great state of California. And so those of you who live out here in California, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And okay, so more information. I may have guests in the future, in the near future, hopefully. You know, there's a joke in podcasting that there are 10,000 podcasts out there and in need of 10,000 guests. So, yeah, so I haven't really investigated that to this point, but should the need arise, I'll probably start having guests, you know, just to kind of build interest. But let's crawl before we can walk, okay? And another thing is that there's not going to be any callers because this is not a live show, so obviously that kind of negates that possibility. But I will be setting up an email for you to, you know, make comments on certain shows at some point, maybe right away, maybe in a few days. I don't know. But you can email comments. At some point, you'll be able to do that. All right. All right. So the funny thing about talk shows, and especially call-in talk shows, is, you know, it's kind of a running little joke in my mind about talk shows. You know, people call up and they'll ask the host a question. And let's just say for the sake of discussion that I got a dude calling me up and he wants to talk about the First Amendment. Okay. I made this little recording and it's a kind of a mock recording of a typical caller. Okay. And once you hear it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And so I start responding on the First Amendment, you know, hey, you know, First Amendment gives you the right to free speech, which means you can go down to the public square, break out your soapbox, stand up there and say whatever you want to say.
Right.
You know, you also have the right to start a podcast. I mean, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want.
Right.
You know, you can write magazine articles. You can open up a YouTube channel.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. You also have the right to criticize the government.
Right.
You have a right to petition the government to redress, for a redress of grievances.
Right.
So anyways,
right.
I'd be going on, and this guy would be going,
right, right, right.
So, I mean, that's kind of the pet peeve with listening to talk shows. I think you know what I'm talking about. And the funny thing is, I was listening to Dr. Laura, and I had listened to her for a while, and she'd have callers coming up, and they'd be doing that all the time. And finally, one day, she says, you know, why did you call me today if you know all this stuff? I mean, you know, you're sitting there and you're going, right, right, like you already know it. Why'd you call me? And the guy or gal says,
Right.
So anyways, I kind of elaborated on the joke and I made up a mock voice. So if I was thinking that if somebody calls up and they're doing this all the time, every time they said,
right,
you'd go. You'd have a recording that you could trigger that would mock them, kind of like a mocking voice. So it would be like this.
Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, the First Amendment gives you the right to free speech.
Right.
Right.
The First Amendment gives you the right to go down to the public square, set up your soapbox, do whatever you want to do.
Right.
Right.
So, anyways, that's just kind of the... obviously, I love sound effects. I love triggering sound effects. And so I hope this isn't going to run you off. You know what I mean? But I just want to have fun. You know what I'm saying? You're not hearing a fan noise right now, are you? Here, let me take care of that. Okay, so let's get serious. All right, what do we got here? Where's my stack of stuff here? Okay. Oh, yeah, and that leads to the next point, which is that free speech is a great Western institution.
Booyah!
But it seems like it's under assault these days with online censorship. You've even have the government petitioning or pressuring social media companies to censor their political opponents. And let's face it, that's all of this, pure and simple. And it's coming out of Washington, D.C., which is controlled by one party, the Democratic Party, which shall be nameless. Anyways, in the news recently was Kathy Hochul. She held a news conference. And, well, let's just play it, and you can decide, all right?
Today I'm directing the Director of Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services to develop media literacy tools for K through 12 in our public schools. This will teach students and even teachers to help understand how to spot conspiracy theories and misinformation, disinformation, and online hate. Start talking about what we're seeing out there. Give the teachers the tools they need to help these conversations in school. And by teaching younger New Yorkers about how to discern between digital fact and digital fiction.
Well, unfortunately, we got little interference. Some people outside were doing a sideshow. So we're going to have to cut that off. Not really, but it's a good excuse as any. So, yeah. So I came up with the Late Great Show because it's kind of a catchy name and it makes people think it rhymes. And it also, what does that mean? What is late great? What does he mean by that? I mean, it rhymes and everything, but what does it mean? You know? So what it means is it's the Late Great Show coming from the late great state of California using the late great institution of free speech. All right. And so when I say the late great podcast, it's a prophetic statement. All right. And so I'm going to keep it going. My goal is to do this for 5 years. All right. You know, put my all into it and see what I can accomplish. You know, just have fun. But along the way, I will be defending and even celebrating, as well as exploring, Western civilization. And I think that's important. So it's going to be a podcast from Western civilization, from way out here on the West Coast, and we're going to be damn proud of it. So, you know, years ago, Jesse Jackson, and I think we all know who Jesse Jackson is. I haven't heard much of him lately. It's probably because he's getting old. But he's a political activist, social activist. And back in 1987, he went out to Stanford University and he riled up a bunch of students to have a protest. And what they were protesting was this class on Western civilization. It was called Western Culture, and it was a requirement. No matter what major you had, whether it be medical, whether it be physics or law, you had to take their class on Western culture. And so he got all the students out in the quad or whatever to run around chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. Hey, hey." Well, anyways, you get the gist, all right? You get the point. It was probably mainly because a lot of students didn't want to waste their time learning about Western civilization in their minds. But it also had political ramifications. It was kind of like how things have been going since the 60s. You know, Western civilization is bad, you know. And so Sorry about that. You know, all of the institutions of Western civilization have been under attack. And they have been under attack for a long time, whether it be the institution of free speech, whether it be the universities, higher education, whether it be marriage, whether it be family. It's all been under attack. I think you know what I mean. You know, even it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. And that brings me to another point. You know, this is not going to be, this is not going to be a history podcast or a political podcast. It's going to be a little of both, but it's not going to be all one thing. And of course, we're going to cover news, current events, that kind of thing. And, but more importantly, I'm going to cover things that I think that you might find interesting. Okay. Moving on here. President Biden, I think President Biden will forever, when you see his name, President Biden, there should be an asterisk next to his name. And for, and it doesn't matter who you are out there, you know what I mean. And a lot of people will say, well, Democrats, they just got out the vote. Well, there's precisely the other half of the country who thinks, yeah, not really. They didn't get out the vote better than Republicans. They got out the ballots, okay? So I know that that's a bone of contention, and I'll just leave that right there. And I'm not really going to harp on it. I love Democrats. I don't like the Democratic Party. Let's just get that out in the open. But I love Democrats. Some of my best friends in my entire life were Democrats, and I loved them like they were brothers, okay? And I think we need to get back to that in this country. We need to start loving each other again, whether you're Democrat or Republican, and stop letting these political parties divide us. On that note, President Biden gave a speech because he's mad that the establishment can't get $60 billion more dollars to send to Ukraine. And who knows where that money is really going, okay? So anyways, well, let's just play the speech, okay?
For Republicans in Congress who think they can oppose funding for Ukraine and not be held accountable, history is watching. History is watching. History is watching.
What?
Failure to support Ukraine at this critical moment will never be forgotten.
Wow. Damn. You know, he said history is watching. I mean, I lost count. How many times did he say history is watching? You know? I mean, what a dork. All right. Well, let's play that again. Because, I mean, this is really extraordinary. Okay, here we go.
For Republicans in Congress who think they can oppose funding for Ukraine and not be held accountable, history is watching. History is watching. History is watching. History is watching. History is watching.
Uh-oh.
History is watching. History is watching.
Dude.
History is watching.
Wow.
History is watching. History is watching.
Somebody tackle him.
History is watching. History is watching. History is watching.
Wow, this is getting sad.
History is watching. History is watching.
Wow.
Watching. History is watching. History is watching. Failure to support Ukraine at this critical moment will never be forgotten.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay. Well, let's move on from that. I mean, that's just...
History is watching.
Let's just leave that right there, okay? All right, now, since we were talking about Stanford a couple minutes ago, it just so happens that I have a history with Stanford University, dating back to when I was a little kid. When I was about 11 years old, I was like any other kid. I'd love to get out there and play, and I'd like to play hard, but it got to a point when I would play hard and I'd really get into some serious roughhousing, you know, with my friends or cousins or what have you, I started getting this sensation. It was like this feeling of fatigue, this kind of tingling, this kind of like a tired muscle feeling in my stomach and in my back, and I had to sit down. And the strange thing was, is that I didn't really feel out of breath, but I just felt tired. And I had to stop. I had to sit down. I couldn't carry on. So my parents, you know, obviously they took me to the doctor, and the doctor did a blood test and found out that I had high blood pressure. You know, and for an 11-year-old, that's not good. You know, so strike one. And so he took my blood pressure down on one of my legs, all right? And I had low blood pressure down there. Okay, so that's like strike two. And so then he ordered, sorry, I know that's kind of crass, but anyways, so then, I mean, this is not really a laughing matter. What am I doing here? But anyways, so then he ordered a chest x-ray, and that came back that showed that I had an enlarged heart. So that's strike three. You know, if you got an enlarged heart, you know, that's a serious problem, especially if you're 11 years old. I mean, you're, so at that point, they took it really, really seriously. And the doctor, family doctor, sent us off to San Francisco to Kaiser Hospital there in San Francisco for a test that required me to drink it was a barium milkshake. It was like a milkshake, but it was warm. Then they took an x-ray. I guess it's kind of a contrast. And that came out negative. So I ended up having to go to Stanford University. And I had a catheterization. And just a quick review of a catheterization. What that is they cut into one of your major arteries, and usually down by on your leg near the groin area. And then they feed a tube all the way up your arteries up into your heart. So they can inject dye, and I think they do angioplasty, I think, nowadays with a catheter. So that's what they did. They injected dye right near my heart, turned the x-ray machine on real quick, and that way they could see the blood flow and if there were any restrictions, okay? Because high blood pressure in the top of my body, low blood pressure in my legs, that kind of gave them a clue. And so what they found was, and by the way, when they injected that dye, it felt like my entire body was on fire. I mean, it was pretty bad. So it was terrifying for an 11-year-old boy. But anyways, they found out that surgery was needed and that I had a coarctation of the aorta, which means they found in the main artery that arches out of the top of your heart and my heart, everybody's heart, it arches out and it travels down through your body and all the way down to your legs, and it branches off to your spine and your kidneys and your liver and what have you all the way down. It's like a tree with branches. Well, it had a malformation from birth and the size of a pinhole. So my heart was trying to force blood through an opening about the size of a pinhole. And if they hadn't caught that, I would probably would have gone into heart failure by age 30. And the thing is that at Stanford University at the time, it was a pretty famous heart surgery team there, or cardiovascular surgery team. My doctor was Dr. Randall Greep, and he was a really nice guy. He came, talked to me the night before the surgery, and he was in scrubs. He seemed like a really nice guy, about 40 years old. But at the time, they were, you know, it was well known that Dr. Norman Shumway was the head of cardiothoracic or cardiovascular surgery there at Stanford University Hospital Medical Center. And just to give you an idea, he went to one of the meccas at the time, back in the 50s, of heart surgery, which was the University of Minnesota. And one of his fellow classmates who went in there for a couple years as an internship or residency, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was Christian Barnard, the guy who did the first heart transplant ever in the history of the world. And of course, Dr. Norman Shumway, whose team my doctor was on, he did his first heart transplant 5 weeks later, which was the first heart transplant, the successful heart transplant in the United States in January of 19, 68. And so he was world famous, and heart transplantation was really weird because back then you had to worry about the concept of brain death. You know, if you had a donor, there was still a question, well, is this guy still alive? And should we be taking his heart out? And so he had to deal with that, you know. So he was a pioneer in that. I mean, him and his team, and of course, Dr. Greet collaborated with him, although wasn't in the operating room at the time. But he was a collaborator on that first American heart surgery. And so I was being treated by guys who were at the very pinnacle of cardiovascular surgery in the world. And so I didn't realize it at the time. I just took it for granted. You know, they just told me as an 11-year-old kid, they said, you know, Robbie, we're just going to go in there. We're going to cut that little blockage out there and sew the two ends back together. You know, and I said, oh, wow, that's easy. But not realizing at the time that once they cut into my aorta, all the blood flow is stopped to my spine, to my kidneys, my liver, my legs. So they got to work fast and they got to get it right. And if they don't, I'm dead. All right. I didn't even register with me at the time because, you know, I'm a kid. But the point is that we take all of this kind of for granted, or I did. And I'm sure that, you know, we look at the institution of Western medicine, all right? And we just think, well, you know, if something goes wrong, I can always have surgery, or they've got miracle drugs nowadays, or they have other types of therapies. Well, the thing is, Western medicine is based on science and evidence, and it's a long, long, long path, but that pathway went through Western civilization, which dates all the way back to before Christ, to the Greeks, you know, the philosophers, the ancient classic literature, all the way up through the life of Christ, to Augustine, to St. Thomas Aquinas, the Reformation, the Enlightenment. The scientific revolution that started, I believe, in the 16th century, if I remember correctly. And then this other minor thing called representative government, freedom, basic human rights. And so that is our heritage, and it's the greatest heritage ever in the history of the world. And you see a lot of people out there talking about slavery and how we're bad and we built it on the backs of slavery, which is not true if you look into it. But Western civilization ended slavery. The British Empire patrolled the seas and sacked Arab slave ships. And I believe they killed everybody on board and rescued the slaves. This is my perspective. You know, talking about Western civilization, this is where I'm coming from. I mean, that's it. So, you know, there's other things too. There's art, you know, like Michelangelo's David and Leonardo da Vinci's masterpieces. You know, you've got musicians like Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, and again, the scientific revolution. I mean, I could do 20 shows on scientific advancements in the Western world. I mean, everything from chemistry to physics to astronomy to medicine, obviously, engineering, I mean, you name it, flight. I mean, we went to the moon. So, okay, so I think I'm going to get out of here. And I thank you very much for listening today, tuning in, sticking with me this far, hopefully. I've got a short list of potential topics for the upcoming days and weeks. And it's going to be anything from science to philosophy to current events, you know, just anything that I think will be both educational, but more importantly, entertaining. And as you can see, I love my sound effects. And so we're definitely going to, you're going to be introduced to a few of them as we go on. So anyways, I'm going to get on out of here. And thanks again. I'm out.